Welcome to the Performance Training Academy podcast with today's guest, James Buckingham. My name is Ashley Hoff, and in episode 3, we're discussing how to be fat adapted. We will cover what it means to be fat adapted, what foods to eat, what ketones are, and how being fat adapted is beneficial not just to your training goals such as endurance training or strength and power training, but how it can put you in a state of optimal health. We hope you enjoy. Okay, so we're here with episode 3 of our podcast platform. Today's one is called How to Be Fat Adapted. And once again, we're joined by James Buckingham. I'll introduce James in a second, but to start off with this one, I'm very excited about this podcast. Nutrition is something I think in the health and fitness world that needs to be discussed, and clarity needs to be given a lot on a lot of different subjects. Everyone's got a view of something. What we've tried to do here at Performance Training Academy is align ourselves with the right people who can explain exactly how a lot of these different trends and resources and research is coming out, explain it in a way that is relatable to everybody else. As a personal trainer in the past, I know with nutrition for me, I love learning new things about nutrition. What I wanted though was it to be simplified so that I could then easily translate it to my clients and help them along the way as well. So James, for those who don't know, has studied nutrition for years, which is why we've brought him on board with us to do our advanced nutrition course, which is again explaining a lot about nutrition and put it into a bit of clarity so it's understandable. And he has done hours and hours and hours of research and reading different articles and doing further courses, which is, again, what we want a lot of fitness professionals to do. So I'm not going to bang on about this. I am excited about the content we've got coming up in this one today. It is all about how to be fat adapted. And James is going to discuss a lot of things that you can consider and apply into your own nutritional habits and that of your friends and family and your clients from today onwards. Again, with the nutrition industry, a lot of people, one person would be saying one thing and shouting from the rooftops about it, and someone would be shouting the complete opposite and probably slagging off that other person as well. And that happens a lot, unfortunately. So we're going to try and keep this as easy to understand as possible. And we're just going to introduce you to it really today. So without further ado, James, how are you doing today?
All good. Thanks, Ash. Thanks for inviting me on for round 3. It's very good.
Round 3. I know it's moving on quite quickly. And the nice thing is we've got some really good podcasts lined up. Nutritional ones, training ones. But the reason I get quite excited about nutrition, again, is because you can chat about nutrition to anyone. Your clients, peers, friends, family. And again, everyone's got an opinion, haven't they? So let's start with this one today then, mate. We're going to talk about how to be fat adapted, being fat adapted. So let's just kick it off, really. So let's just summarize. What is being fat adapted?
So that's a great question. I think if we look from an evolutionary point of view, our ancestors very likely, more than likely, fueled themselves from being adapted to use fats and proteins as their fueling source, rather than exclusively on carbohydrates, which is the modern way, as our fuel source. And so being fat adapted allows us to tap into our fat stores in order to fuel ourselves. So if you look at the animal kingdom, for example, and you hear all the time on the TV when they're doing animal programs, you know, oh, this polar bear, this animal here is getting himself nice and fat so he can survive the winter. And of course, we're exactly the same insofar as we are designed to be able to use the fat which we eat from animal produce, or indeed the fat that we're storing on us, to fuel ourselves when food is scarce. So we should be adapted to use fats as our fuel, as our main fuel source, surprisingly. The waters get a little bit muddied when, at the moment, food, all types of food, is so readily available. And with the advance of more high carbohydrate, high sugar type foods, that gives us instant accessible energy, but it's only short-lived. So carbohydrates give us instant short energy. Fat adaption allows us to use fats, which gives us much more energy. And if we look at it from a calorie point of view, and this should tell you something, a gram of fats will give us nine calories, whereas a gram of carbohydrates or protein gives us 4 calories. So if you take that equation, and bear in mind nature isn't stupid, that tells you clearly that we should be using fats as our primary fuel source. I'll shut up in a minute, Ash, but that doesn't mean guzzling loads of fat. It means eating good quality, nutrient-dense food, which has got protein and fat in it. Anything we store in our bodies when we're hungry or times are scarce, we can then access that very, very easily. If we're using carbohydrates all the time, we can't access it as quickly. And there's a bit of a time delay lag. Mm. That's it, basically, in a nutshell. Yeah.
And that's what we're going to go into a lot over the next 20, 30 plus minutes of this podcast. On that note, can you tell us or tell those listening, we mentioned this in our advanced nutrition course, you straight away reference evolution, where we've come from as beings. And this is the key, isn't it? You know, we need to look about what our genetics are and where we've come from. What's that little term you use about how far we've come in the last hundreds, thousands of years, about how much we've evolved? Can you give us that little stat?
Well, we've only evolved, if you listen to the experts, we've only evolved 0.02% since we were cutting around hunting and gathering, not eating cornflakes, but hunting and gathering animal produce and plant, whatever we had. Mm. So that's a huge amount of time that we were hunter-gatherers. And yet in the annals of time, when we're eating, as we are nowadays, high carbohydrates, it's only like a second or two.
Mm. Yeah.
So we've moved fairly far away from our natural way of fueling ourselves.
So on that, Jim, it's a case of what you're saying there is our bodies haven't changed that much. Yet the food that we are now eating, and we're eating this, let's be fair, because we're being sold to eat these type of foods, it's changed massively. And it's as far from what we should be eating as possible. And I'll be very stereotypical. There's lots of people who even think they follow quite a healthy lifestyle and quite a healthy nutritional intake, but they're still getting most of their fuel from carbohydrates because they're eating those healthy snack cereal bars. They're having cereal for breakfast. They're having the sandwiches for lunch, the pasta in the evening. And the percentages of carbohydrate as opposed to the other macronutrients of protein and fat goes heavily in favor of carbohydrate. And that's your point with that 0.02% about how much we've changed is we haven't changed that much. Our body still needs the same type of fuels, yet we are fueling ourselves. And this is very common in the UK, the US, and probably a lot of other main continents of the world are eating completely differently to how we should be eating because of mass marketing and production and stuff like that as well, isn't it?
Yeah, mate, it's only marketing that's made us eat this way, of course. And you know, so if we go back to, as I said, our evolutionary, what it appears to have happened is we initially weren't equipped physically to kill something. Mm. However, we were very, very good scavengers. So we'd get to the carcass of where some other animal had been and crack the bones and eat the brain. And that was high in omega-3 fats. Mm-hmm. And that, therefore, they've increased our brain size, and therefore we're able to think. So we evolved to eat lots and lots of omega-3 from fatty acids, or bone marrow, brain matter, and all that business. Our brains then grew, and then of course we figured out how to hunt in packs and capture things and do all that stuff. And then we start eating more protein, animal protein, and fats. You know, don't forget that a piece of muscle meat contains fats and protein is the correct ratio. Yeah. Internal organs contains protein and fats in the correct ratio, you know, all these things. And then we became, once we started eating more muscle meat and fats, we grew stronger, fitter, brighter, more intelligent. And then, of course, what happened is we figured out that actually, I don't want to be trying to hunt something that could cause me damage. I'll start farming. And that was about, you know, 10 to 12,000 years ago. And since then, we've lost 2 inches of height. We've become much sicker. we live longer, but that's because we're not in our natural environment. But we've definitely become weaker and stupider as a species. So there you have it.
And wasn't that as well? Yeah, and wasn't that at that time, that's when we started settling down as people. That's when we were no longer free. That's when we started cultivating our crops on our land, and we had to stay on our land. And that's where we are today, effectively, isn't it? You know,
That's it. That's it, mate. Yeah, we went from kind of hunting and gathering, being extremely fit and strong and robust and bright and intelligent and all that stuff, to figuring out, because we got so intelligent, to farm and settle down, therefore less active maybe. And certainly got more unhealthy, we lost height, and here we are now, kind of after the war type thing, where advertisers have gone crazy, and now we think that you know, this latest protein bar or this latest cereal snack is the way to do it. Of course, it's far from it.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And we'll move on from there, because I know, because that's like a massive topic we can definitely chat more about, and I'm sure we probably will on another podcast. But on that one, just to finish in terms of like the whole marketing side of it, I think people can be aware about how we're sold carbohydrates. You just go to any supermarket and you look down, there's one whole aisle which is just cereal by Kellogg's and someone else probably as well, you know. So it's you can understand why people think they're eating healthy, but they're eating wrong. One of the things you and I have discussed before we started our advanced nutrition course is the kind of how we want to get people educated on how to eat more local. And then again, if you eat local, if you go to your local farm shops and stuff, you see the produce you can buy there is, again, more protein and fats dominant, isn't it, than carbohydrate. But let's draw a line on that bit for now. We'll come back to another day about evolution and stuff as well. But it leads us nicely, doesn't it, into being like fat adapted and stuff. So let's go into, obviously, with being fat adapted, we're talking about ketones and getting energy from ketones. And I think a lot of individuals are unclear about ketones. Are they a good thing? Are they a bad thing? A lot of people relate ketones to gluconeogenesis as well, where you're getting that breakdown of protein. But then people, as soon as you hear gluconeogenesis, they're thinking of breaking down of muscle being a bad thing. And obviously that's a side effect of some of these if you get your nutrition wrong. But let's go into, James, a little bit about what are ketones. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. And it's what we're supposed to be burning as fuel, as beings, right?
Yeah. So we've got a couple of different fuel avenues that we can use. We can use the one that everyone's using at the moment, you know, carbohydrates in order to break down to glucose, which gives us instant energy, which burns fairly dirty, but it's instant energy. And I know you talk about that later on with them. The fire thing. That's one fueling method, not the only one. There's another fueling method, which you rightly pointed out, was gluconeogenesis, whereby we break down protein or muscle, or indeed fat actually, in the liver, and that produces the amino acids come into the liver and then get metabolized into glucose in order to give us energy. So we're getting glucose now from two forms, one from carbs and one from breakdown of protein and or fat in the liver. No problem at all there. And then we've got the use of fatty acids coming into the liver again when we're hungry or when carbohydrates are low, and the liver will make ketones, and ketones are an excellent fueling source. And there's another way where fatty acids get cleaved from our, you know, when we've got fats on us, fatty acids get cleaved from the fat cells and directly into the target cells. So fatty acids and ketones, not quite the same, but similar insofar as they're from fat. Now, ketones, they are only really produced when carbohydrates are low. Because if carbohydrates are high, then we'll simply use the easy fuel of glucose. But that constantly needs to be topped up. And, you know, the talk about the fuel tank.
Yeah.
So let's say in my body, from a carbohydrate point of view, I can I can top out. I can only hold about 2,500 calories worth of carbohydrates in my body. And that's in my liver, a little bit in my blood, and my muscles. That's it. Mm-hmm. Anything over and above that will be stored as fat. So once that whole fuel tank of 2,500 calories worth of carbohydrates, glycogen, is gone, then I have to start using fatty acids as my fueling source, mm-hmm. or ketones as my fueling source. So you can see that small carbohydrate tank is only a small tank, whereas mm-hmm. I've got forever fuel on me insofar as I'm carrying, let's say, 12% body fat, that, I don't know, 100,000 calories worth of fuel right there. And if I can be adapted to use that, then I can use the carbohydrate tank as a backup source. Mm. But in order to be able to become fat adapted, there is a you have to go through a bit of kind of adaption. Do you want me to talk about that now, mate?
Yeah, carry on. Yeah.
Okay, so let's say you listen to a podcast and you decide, actually, I'm going to listen to those guys. I'm going to try to burn fats as my fueling source because it's clean and arguably better, and there's less oxidative damage and reactive oxidation species. I'm going to go for it. And of course, I'll lose fat and I'll maintain muscle. I'll talk about that another time. How do I do it? So firstly, you need to reduce your carbohydrates down to about 50 grams per day. That's what people generally say, 50 grams or less per day. So that's not a whole lot. Basically, you don't have any formal carbohydrates at all, really. And your body will always survive. So although you're not giving any carbs, the body will go, oh, Christ, what am I going to do here? And you might feel a bit of brain fog. You might feel lethargic. You might feel irritable. You might have problems sleeping for a little bit of time. First couple of days, you'll feel fine, and then you'll slump. And that slump always happens. Normally, it lasts for about between 3 days to about 8, 9, 10 days. Once you come out of that slump, all of a sudden, you've lost some weight. Normally, that's water weight. Mm-hmm. And you'll be starting to use fats and protein as your fueling source. Remember, fats via fatty acids and ketones, all good. And protein via gluconeogenesis, which produces glucose. Mm-hmm. Hope I'm not getting too...
No, this is perfect. Thing here.
But because the body will survive, so you're forcing the body to adapt from using the crack cocaine of sugar, really, mm-hmm. as its fuel source. And there are, after a while, then you'll become adapt, or you'll find using fatty acids is your primary go-to rather than at the moment using carbohydrates is your primary go-to. So that is the way to do it. So how would you do that from a meal point of view? I can talk about that in a minute if you want to, mate, but
yeah, a couple things on that. So, I think if anyone is listening to this and hopefully people are thinking, I want to try this, you know, I want to try to eat as my body is designed to eat. And that's the only way you can listen to all the podcasts and read all the books and read all the papers in the world. But the only time you can really understand if this works for you as an individual is to try it yourself. I know this is one thing you're a good advocate of, as in whether it's like going fat adapted, which I know you kind of follow now as well. But if it's intermittent fasting, you will read it, you will take on board the research, and you would try it yourself. And I think for anyone listening to this who is in the slightest bit interested, will it make them feel better? Will it give them more energy for their training goal? Will it make them feel healthier and give them more energy throughout the day? Just try it and see how it feels. Now, you mentioned as well, it's about giving it time, isn't it? We'll discuss the food sources in a minute, but as soon as you change your diet in any way, the body has to adapt to that change, doesn't it? And it gets coined as is it keto flu, I've read, or something like that, where there's that sit where it's like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, where you can feel, you know, not very good. Your hormones a little bit, they need to regulate a bit more. But once you get past that, that's when you see the real benefit of it. And I was reading something recently and it was saying about too many people, they change their diet to feel like what it is to be fat adapted, to see the effects and the benefits of it, but they don't give it long enough. They'll try it, as you said, like a week, 2 weeks, and then feel like, oh, I actually feel worse, there's no change, I'm just going to go back to eating how I was. Do you know what I mean? And is that true, that whole keto flu? What would you recommend? I mean, it's like anything. You've got to give it at least 21 days to form a habit, but I'm sure it's about 21 days for your body to feel better about this whole situation as well, right?
Yeah, Ash, when I learned all this stuff years ago, the guy, Charles Poliquin, was saying that you need to give yourself at least 21 days in order to kind of become fat adapted. Mm. And he was very zealoty. He would say you can't even have a single, not even a tic-tac. You've got to just do 21 days complete, cold turkey, nothing.
Yeah.
So, you know, fair enough. But the point is that if you rightly point out, if you give up halfway through as a week and you're feeling terrible, you are going to feel terrible because, you know, you're coming out of that high carb, high sugar, you know, your brain functions slightly different into a fat adapted type of thing. And it does, as you rightly pointed out, take time. And I would ask people, if they're going to do it, they'll feel terrible for the first week. You will, there's no doubt. Mm. But after that, you'll feel, oh Christ, you know, I've lost a bit of weight, maybe even half a stone, you know, in very, very quickly, in 7 to 10 days. A lot of that is water weight, as I say. But then all of a sudden you go, oh, I feel a little bit better. My brain is a bit sharp. I can focus more. I don't have to snack all the time, because now you're using the fat that's on your body or what you've eaten. You don't have to eat fat, by the way, you know, just saying that, you know, that you're now what I call forever fuel, and you don't have to kind of having a snack here and there. In fact, and then we can talk about fasting later on if you want to, Ash, and that really does kind of accelerate the whole thing. Just one thing on fasting, mind, because I know it's getting all kind of a sexy thing to do nowadays, and I'm a big fan of it. But if you're fat adapted first, do that 21 days, for example, and then you want to fast occasionally, it becomes easy to fast because you're fat adapted. You know, that's the whole bloody point. So you can live off the fuel that you've got on yourself.
Yeah.
But if you try to do fasting straight away without being fat adapted, you know, your blood sugar levels all over the place, you're crashing, your cortisol's up, your insulin's up, and you have this cortisol insulin seesaw and you feel like death. That's why people say, oh, I get hangry, in other words, hangry after 2 hours or 4 hours of not eating. Yeah. Jesus, that's
and the
terrible.
Funny thing with that, again, is hangry is now like a regularly, you know, commonly used term, isn't it? My kids use the word hangry. Do you know what I mean? So, mate, so on that, can I now use my campfire analogy, Paddy?
Yeah, I know you've been dying to use it, Ash, so crack on.
Thanks, mate. Okay, so a few years ago, you recommended me a book called The Primal Blueprint by Mark Sisson. And anyone listening to this, it's definitely worth a read. Relates nutrition and activity to how our bodies should be reacting by our genetics and where we come from, etc. But one thing that I took away from that, which helped me understand a little bit about using protein and fats for your energy source, rather than constantly using glucose and carbohydrates, was the campfire analogy. And the analogy was this. So someone who is constantly getting their energy throughout the day, and this is day in, day out, week in, week out, every single month of the year, year upon year, living on carbohydrates is a bit like setting up your campfire with just kindling and paper and a lighter. On a campsite, you light the paper, you get the kindling going, the fire burns very brightly and very quickly, and it looks very impressive as soon as it's up and running. Where someone next to that person on the campsite is probably spending a bit more time on their fire, getting logs ready, not just kindling, and they're just taking a bit more time getting it sorted. They might look at the person who set up this campfire using kindling and paper and think it looks very impressive, but can you sit next to a fire which has just been made out of kindling and paper, and does it burn for a long time? No, it doesn't. It will go out very quickly, almost as quickly as it started. So you have to constantly attend to this fire. You've got to constantly be putting more kindling on, more paper on, just to keep it burning. Now, the analogy is this. That kindling and that paper is like having a carbohydrate meal. You take in the carbohydrates, it burns very quickly within the body. You feel good just after eating the meal, but then you get a slump, where the energy's been burnt off. You can do two things. You can stay in that slump, or you can eat some more carbohydrate to get the energy coming back in again. So it's those peaks and troughs sort of scenario. Someone who has spent a bit more time on their fire, and yes, maybe use a bit of kindling and paper to get it going, but then use logs on their fire. Once that fire is going, the fire burns, it produces heat, and it keeps on going. It doesn't constantly need to be attended to. And that is someone who's eating more so from the protein and fat diet. They feel sustained for longer. They don't have to constantly be topping themselves up with more fuel. Another takeaway I put on that before I put this to you, and you can explain it so much more scientifically than what I am, is if you're just using your carbohydrates, if you look at that fire, which is made up of paper and kindling that burns very brightly, but then goes out very quickly, it also gives off a lot of black smoke, toxic sort of fuel. And it's a bit like if you have carbohydrate, and you can explain this better than me in a minute, you get a big release of free radicals around your body, which leads to oxidation, right? The fire, which is made up of protein and fats and the big logs, that burns brightly, it gives off warmth, it burns for a lot longer, and it gives off a lot of a cleaner byproduct. It's a lot of a cleaner smoke, not black smoke. That analogy kind of stayed with me, and it was a case of, I get that. If I have a carbohydrate meal, I feel the energy, but then very quickly afterwards, I'm either hungry again or I'm having that drop in my energy stores. I feel like I need to eat something else. That snack, that cereal bar, whatever it may be. If you have a good meal of protein and fats, and we'll talk about food considerations in a second, if you have that good meal of protein and fats, you feel fuller for longer. Your mindset, your energy levels is better. And when we talk about food considerations in a minute, it's like the whole having steak for breakfast thing. It's kind of like thought to be completely strange for a lot of people who think breakfast is all about cereal or muesli or something like that. Having steak for breakfast doesn't seem right in the slightest. But if you have steak for breakfast, you get all these different benefits, don't you? In terms of, you do get your energy, you do feel more alert in the mindset, you're ready for the day. So on that campfire analogy, James, was that right? Is that sort of thing that you would say, yep, that sounds about, it is an analogy, I know, but it kind of sits home a little bit, doesn't it? In terms of what happens if you have carbohydrates all day long, as opposed to if you had protein or fats all day long, right?
Yeah, mate, I don't want to repeat what you said. You said it pretty well. What happens is the fueling's the byproduct of the carbohydrate metabolizing or fueling is what they call reactive oxygen species. Things like rogue electrons, which is free radicals, I should say, oxidation. You know, you're browning, as it were, you're rusting.
Yeah.
And therefore, people talk about needing loads and loads of antioxidants. You know, you take on board more antioxidants, antioxidation. Mm. So you're right, the whole fueling, when you're fueling from carbohydrates, a bit more kind of collateral damage, shall we say.
Yeah.
And therefore, oxidation. But when you're fueling from fatty acids and ketones, you don't need to worry too much about that necessarily because you're endogenous. Your endogenous antioxidant will take care of that glutathione. But anyway, you said it fairly well, mate, that's fine.
Which is why, as well, we're not discussing this just because of it might help people lose weight. You know, the main emphasis that when we started discussing the advanced nutrition course even was, it's not just about weight loss and muscle growth. Yes, that is the primary reason for a lot of people to change their nutrition, but it's about health, isn't it? It's about health and making our bodies in as optimal state of health as possible. Am I right in just saying, just to finish that one before we talk about meal considerations, the oxidation and stuff that can lead to pathways of disease and dysfunction and stuff like that as well. And I don't know the answer to this as well, but like if you're having most of your food coming in through carbohydrates, and then yes, you are told then make sure you have your antioxidants, it's because you're following a high carbohydrate diet. Is that right?
That is one of the reasons you'll need more, or you'll possibly need more if you're on a high carbohydrate diet. Yeah, for sure. When I mean carbohydrates, I mean crappy carbohydrates, you know.
Yeah.
They talk about fatty acids and ketones burning cleaner, and that's basically exactly what they're saying. Otherwise, we can do another complete lecture about those whole pathways, but there's probably no need to at the moment.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. Okay, so on that, I'm sure a lot of people listening to this are dying to find out about, okay, so what type of foods can you be consuming to be fat adapted? What type of foods could you eat that will convert into ketones? And so your body isn't just relying on the carbohydrates converted into glycogen and glucose. So what would be, and I mentioned very briefly them, and I've been, when I mention this to friends, family, again, they look at me like I'm weird. You've probably had the same when you advise your clients. And I think you were the one that educated me on the benefits of having red meat for breakfast, for example. Mm. I think listening to this next part of the podcast, go into it with an open mind. Don't listen to this thinking, no, breakfast is all about cereal, toast, at most maybe eggs or something like that. But people do eat meat for breakfast. They have a full English, for example, right? It's just changing people's perception of what the foods are that you could consider to eat to put yourself in this fat adaptive state, right?
So going back to evolution, I won't bang on too much, but bear in mind, if you accept the fact that we should be fat adapted and you're using fats as our fueling source and you know, protein and fat as our fueling source, if you accept that and you accept the fact that we've only evolved 0.02%, if you accept that, then it's blatantly obvious what we should be eating. Certainly not a high carbohydrate diet, which wasn't part of our dietary intake back in the day. So and we don't necessarily want to talk about the hormonal cascade in that at the moment, I guess, Ash. But
no, not today. We'll save that one.
Yeah. If we also accept that in order to become fat adapted, we force our body to use fats as our main fueling source, therefore we have to be low in carbohydrate. That's just the given. It has to be. If it's high in carbs, you won't become fat adapted. Okay, so therefore a low carbohydrate diet for breakfast certainly is important. And we know that all our cells are made of protein and fat. Every single cell is made of protein and fat. Therefore, we should be eating protein and fat. So it's pretty straightforward. It's not rocket science. You have to accept the fact that what we've talked about before, of course. So a good breakfast choice might be, steak. Another one, bear in mind, I don't want to go down the carnivore explanation just yet. No. But they have a fair point. But if you are going to go nose to eating just steak only, you're missing a trick, because we're designed to eat what I call tongue to tail of an animal. So the internal organs, the liver, the heart, the kidneys, the spleen, you know, all that stuff. Anyway, I'm digressing slightly, as I normally do.
Just on that, James, before you move on, so the whole tongue to tail thing, again, people will hear that and maybe that does sound a bit disgusting, it does sound a bit gross, but again, that's your mince, right? If you have your nice cuts that are expensive, that people tend to eat more of, but if you get the mince, and good quality mince as well, because again, mince can be deemed to be like, if you go to a supermarket, you've got mince choices, you've got your normal mince, you've got your low fat mince as well, right? If you just go to a local butcher's who will take the other parts of the animal and mince it up, that's the good bit, right?
Yeah, of course. All it is as long as you know what they call fillers, then you're okay. It's, fats and gristle and bone and also not so much bone, but, all that stuff. And that's what you would have eaten as a hunter-gatherer. You've eaten that animal. Now, just I want to make the point that people completely understand. It's not just meat only. It's all parts of the animal, even the tongue, the heart, the liver. You have to eat all that, not all the time, but throughout. And we can talk about, the nutrient ratios when it comes to methionine and that type of thing and glycine, there's a kind of a ratio there. But it doesn't really matter. So for example, using myself this morning, I knew I was going to be coming on here, so I thought I need to be fairly sharp. This is me sharp, by the way. So I had ox cheek and kidney. It was in the slow cooker, but ox cheek and kidney, and eat that, and that's just been breakfast and a cup of coffee. That's it. So breakfast can be, let's say, for example, you wanted a list, I'd go for one day it might be eggs, the next day it might be liver, the next day it might be mince or steak, the next day it might be heart, the next day it could be a mixture of all of those things, mince. But what I'm trying to say is it's high, and then I don't upset the vegetarians and vegans, but high animal produce. And the reason for animal produce is because the bioavailability, bio body availability available to the body from animal produce is far, far, far greater than that from a plant sources. And we can talk about the whole, vegetarian carnivore type thing.
I think that's definitely a different podcast as well, because we're not anti-vegetarians, we're not anti-vegans and stuff like that as well. But this is just talking about nutrition as close to home as our bodies are supposed to consume it, right? There's definitely a whole other podcast we can discuss when it comes to vegetarianism and veganism and so forth. So that will be a different date that we do that. Obviously, you've probably had this with clients. Not every client that you turn to and you're talking about like eat the heart, eat the livers and stuff like that. A lot of people must turn around and say, there's no chance. I'm not going to. So let's come down. Is there like a dumbed down not a dumbed down version, but like a watered down version of what people can consume to be fat adapted? Now, hopefully there are people out there saying, oh, that's great. You know, I love to eat offal and heart and stuff like that as well. I know how to cook with those things. And that's another thing. Don't just accept that you're going to buy a heart and then stick it on your chopping board and think, what do I do with that? Learn and educate about how to cook with these different cuts of meat or parts of the animal, effectively, right? Let's have a watered down version then. So eggs, really good way to start the day, right? That's one thing. Sausages even, you know, sausages, again, if you buy decent sausages from a butcher where you know how they've been made, not with the fillers, as you said earlier about the mince, same thing with sausages, I think, isn't it? There's lots of fillers that when it's been mass produced would be used to keep down the cost of production and sell to the masses. So again, it comes back to how we're recommending people go to their local butchers, their local greengrocers to buy their meat and their vegetables and the fruit. What would be some watered down versions? So eggs is a good breakfast, right? Any other ones that spring to mind?
So eggs is good. And the thing that falls out from that thing you just said there, Ash, is the fact when we talk about protein and fat, a lot of people think, oh Christ, do I have to worry about the fat and the protein? Well, actually, no. If you eat an egg, it's got protein and fat in it. If you have then for the next day, you have steak, it's got protein and fat in it. If you have, let's say, some form of liver, it's got protein and fat in it. So let's say you decide to go for mince, but you want just make your own homemade burgers. It's all got protein and fat in it, but it's all good quality meat. You know, that's the key, but obviously you're not some crappy stuff. And so I would normally just simply recommend, I'd ask a person I'm talking to about to say, I'd like you to eat red meat for breakfast. What can you do? And they go, and then I'll prompt them by saying, well, what about lamb meat? They go, oh yeah, okay. Then it was steak meat, you know, beef, ostrich, all that type of thing. That's what I'd go for, red meat generally, or eggs, or parts thereof in the morning.
Yeah.
Now, that people then think, oh Christ, you're just going to eat red meat all the time. And therefore there's a misunderstanding that red meat is really bad for you. And of course, that's not the truth at all. It would appear that was just weirdness. But if it's crap quality, I keep saying it's got to be good quality. Then for lunch, you might want to have something with what I call with wings. So some form of fowl, bird, chicken, whatever, you know, that might be a lunch type thing, maybe with a bit of salad if you wanted to. I normally would have a piece of fruit rather than just chicken. And then in the evening, you might have something that's very easily digestible, which is fish. So you can see the cascade would be red meat in the morning. It's got a certain amino acid profile. White meat or something with wings in the afternoon, different amino acid profile again, and fat profile, but it's protein and fat. And then the evening fish, once again, different amino acids and fat profile, but still good quality. So that would be the kind of cascade, and the fish is easy to digest in the evening, so it calms you down. So that would, how if you did that for about 3 weeks, initially you'll feel okay for the first 2 or 3 days, then you feel terrible, but then you will start to feel fine if you stick with it. After about 8 days, 9 days, people start to feel, oh, I feel a bit better, weirdly. And that's not weird at all. That's the body actually rebooting back to how it should be from our, you know, ancestral days. We've evolved only 0.02%. And I keep repeating myself, but it's quite important that people, it's the mindset thing. You have to go, actually, okay, if I'm like a zebra eats what a bloody zebra eats. It doesn't deviate. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that help at all, Ash?
It does. And I think it kind of highlights how far removed we are from what we should be eating. Because I'm sure there's a lot of people that would be thinking, oh, I don't know if I can actually eat that way. But once you just spend a bit of time, put a plan in place to eat this way as well. But look, I mean, when I used to teach in classrooms about nutrition as well, it would be a case of I started a certain lecture with like, eat how your great grandma used to eat. And it was, if I look at my great nan, she would like start each day by saying, do you want some kippers? And I know it goes against like, you know, having fish in the morning instead of red meat in the morning, but that's my nan's go-to, was to eat some kippers, right? If my sister was listening to this, she'll probably be chuckling, because that was my nan's like little catchphrase, want some kippers for breakfast? And as a kid, I'm like, no. But you kind of start liking it a little bit as well. And fish is another one, isn't it? People seem to like turn their nose up at fish a little bit, but we should be eating fish because there's so many benefits to it as well. But again, if you look at how your great grandparents used to eat, it was so different to what it is. It's that meat and two veg sort of analogy, right? And now that meat and two veg thing for a lot of people seems to be like so they're very far removed from that. You actually encouraged me, this is going back quite a few years, about having red meat for breakfast. And just to hammer the benefits of this home was how it makes you feel. If you eat like we're sold to eat, a bowl of Special K, it's a big shoot of energy first thing in the morning, insulin spike, but very quickly you come down. By the time you sit at your desk or whatever your job is, after you've had that bowl of cereal, chances are you're going to get to your desk and you're going to be very like, oh, I don't even know where to start with my day. You're not going to be very motivated. You're not going to be very switched on in the brain. You mentioned to me, eat red meat. Can you just quickly explain the benefits of why you've said that hormonal cascade as such, which we'll discuss another day, why you start the day with red meat? What happens when we consume that red meat first thing in the morning to our mindset?
So firstly, from a physiological point of view, obviously you're getting an influx of protein and fat. Every cell in the body is made of protein and fat. No cell in the body at all is made of carbohydrates. Not a single cell is made of carbohydrates. So that's worth reminding. So we can bang about that another day. But from a hormonal cascade point of view, when you're eating protein and fat, the first thing you put in your mouth in the morning will have a positive or negative effect on your hormonal cascade, how perky you feel. The hormonal or the neurotransmitters that fire up when you eat a high protein, high fat breakfast, red meat, if you wish, doesn't have to be red meat, but you know, that's like kippers and eggs. That's a perfect one. That's an old school classic breakfast back in the day. That used to be the Kellogg's cornflakes of the day back in the day. Anyway, the neurotransmitters that you want to fire up are dopamine and acetylcholine, and they perk up your brain, so you're fired up, ready to roll. And that's why, you know, the ox cheeks and kidneys earlier on. So my brain's fired up. Then in the evening you go down, and then if you want to relax and calm down, then you might want to have something far more easy to digest and maybe even add some carbohydrates there and then in order to kick in dopamine, serotonin and GABA, which are calming down neurotransmitters. But for the purpose of what we're discussing here, we're trying to do no carbohydrate at all, formal carbohydrates for this 21-day type boot camp thing. You can be adapted quicker or later, but 21 days, I like to, I used to say 28 days, but 21 days seems to be about right. So that's from the hormonal cascade point of view, Ash.
And again, that will lead into a whole podcast on that one as well. So don't, I know people listen might think we're breezing over this, but we will explain this more in depth in a later one. Just a couple of things to touch on. You repeated a few times how it's good to understand that you don't have to look at protein and fat individually. Like, it's that whole thing of Mother Nature has packaged the food up to give us what we need, isn't it? And that's what it is. It's not just, if you have a steak, for example, it's got your protein, it's got your fat, and it's got vitamins and minerals packaged within that as well. Vegetables will have your fiber, your fat, bit of protein, vitamins and minerals again. So it's important, I think, not to separate the macronutrients too much, isn't it? And we'll discuss that more another day. One thing I just want to ask you about is saturated fat, how it's got a bad rep. Even those who know quite a lot about nutrition would be saying, oh, don't eat too much saturated fat. Don't eat too much red meat because your saturated fat levels would be too high. Can you give us a little bit of an insight on that and maybe put some people at ease? And this is coming, this isn't just coming from your thought process and what you deterred from what you've learned. It's if you've read papers and research papers, scientific papers, which will explain that saturated fat shouldn't be labeled as a bad thing, right?
Mate, that's so important. So remember, we have to go back to the key thing. If we accept that we've only evolved 0.02%, if we accept that we should be using fats and proteins as our fuel source, well then saturated fat shouldn't be even on our radar as a problem. But saturated fat, you know, let's say a slice of good quality steak, there's different types of fat in it, one of them which is saturated fat. There's a difference between that saturated fat and then other types of fat that are hydrogenated, which are man-made, pumped with hydrogen, you know, man-made Frankenstein type foods. Yeah. And that can be from crappy meat sources as well, you know, and also some meat that are factory farmed from an unhealthy animal, the ratio of omega-3 good to omega-6 not so good is very, very high. So saturated fat from eggs, from steak, from animal produce, so long as it's a good quality, happy animal, is not an issue. It's just not an issue. But people get confused with the saturated fat, which is named together with hydrogenated fat, you know, and that's completely a thing. That's not good. Because it has a different effect on our bodies, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. There is something else regarding fat. So let's say years ago there was people say, oh, fat's the way to do it, let's just eat loads of fats. Well no, you just eat you don't just eat exponential amounts of fat. That's crazy. One, from a calorific point of view, and two, it's not good either. So let's say, for example, the bulletproof coffee craze that was a couple of years ago, and people pouring a cup of coffee, then butter, then ghee, then MCT or medium chain triglyceride, or also all of a sudden you have this 8,000-9,000 calories worth of gloopy fatty. Well, that's where's that in nature? So, you know, you have to realize it's nutrient dense food, normally best from an animal produce, from good quality animal. You don't have to worry about the bloody saturated fat. The only thing that you might consider is, you've been on, this is another podcast, by the way, if you've been under a huge amount of stress, your ability to digest that food is scuppered. It's not the food's fault, it's your fault. It's your digestive enzymes aren't correct. So that's quite an important thing. I can talk about thyroid function and digestive enzymes, but your ability to break down that food can be plus or minus depending on how healthy you are. So just be aware of that.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question about
it does. And I guess on that, you mentioned earlier about the hormonal cascade, about like changing your food sources throughout the day to suit your hormonal levels and what's going on in your day as well. You did actually say, you know, eat the red meat, have that for breakfast, and then, you know, your white meat, your poultry for lunch. And I guess it just makes people be understanding that you do still need a bit of a balance when it comes to your food. You know, I remember when I first got into my training back in like my late teens, wanting to be like a bodybuilder or put on muscle and stuff like that, you know, following a chicken and rice diet 6 times a day. God knows what that did to my hormones and stuff as well. Yes, my protein level intake was coming in, but, you know, it didn't do anything for my health or for my hormonal balance. But you rightly said earlier, like, have your red meat in the morning. You're not then saying have red meat for lunch, red meat for dinner, red meat the next day. It's like everything in life. You need a balance to it. So your body still gets what it needs, doesn't it? You know, and I think it's important to point out that saturated fat is not a bad thing. And I'm sure there's people listening to this even now. Like, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, no, it is a bad thing, go and do some research on it as well and understand that saturated fat is what our bodies will use and needs as well. And it is packaged within the foods that we should be eating. And that's the key thing to make. On that as well, it's about eating as close to nature as possible in terms of getting your food from as best a source as possible. And I'm going to go into price in a second as well. But you mentioned that if it's coming from a local farm shop or somewhere where you know pretty much where that meat's come from, speak to the butchers even, like, you know, and network with the butchers a little bit, find out a little bit more where the food that you're putting into your body is coming from. You know, the reason that fats get a bad name is because of the man-made fats, and they do that too for mass production, for money saving costs and all that sort of stuff. That's why when people say, well, why are takeaways so bad? Even if I just go get some chicken from a takeaway or something like that, it's what it's been cooked in as well, isn't it? All that cheap fat that's got sucked into the food that you then put into your body. So that's why takeaways, you know, if you love a takeaway, go and have a takeaway every now and then, but don't live on takeaways, you know. Just to finish off this, because we do want to discuss about how all this relates to training as well very briefly, but price, people shouldn't put a price on their health, should they? You know, and I think it's very, and I know not everyone's, maybe, you know, people might have to like count the pennies each week. Everyone's in different, has different livelihoods, but you can't put a price on your health. Just try to eat. And I think when you go to your local butchers, yes, it may look expensive at the start, but when you look at what you actually get for that money as well, sometimes it can work out cheaper. You know, I know going to our local butchers, you can get a lot of mints for a decent price, and at first that price is quite pricey. It's like 18 quid for a lot of mints, but when you break it down, that's actually cheaper than going to a large chain supermarket and getting a plastic tub of mints, which is cheaper But when you put it in relation to the amount you're getting, it's actually sometimes as much or more than, isn't it? You know, so you couldn't put a price on this sort of stuff, can you? You just got to think, right, I'm doing this for my health, for my family's health, and invest in your health. And that's what's key, right?
Yep. Just the point, hammer home again, Ash, is if you must, if you're going to go down this kind of route of eating, of believing what I'm saying about eating and the animal source, it's nose to tail or tongue to tail as best you possibly can.
Yeah.
Same as a chicken. Don't just get chicken breast. Buy a whole chicken. Mm. Chuck it in the slow cooker. Eat the whole bloody thing. Mm. Not in one go, unless you want to.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, that's the point. So we're designed to eat the whole thing. Mm. Even chew on the ends of the bones, because you know you get the bone marrow from that as well. So,
anyway, well, again, and it goes back to my nan. You know, she, it's a common thing. You buy a whole chicken, you cook the whole chicken, you take as much meat of it as you can. Carcass goes in the food waste, right? My nan would take that carcass and make soups, gravies, and stuff like that out of it as well. So you just boil it, get all the goodness out. I know it's not chewing on the bones like you just said. But it's that same thing. It's utilizing as much of the animal that you've just bought as possible, isn't it? You know?
Yep.
And one more thing before we go into training considerations, the bulletproof coffee thing, I think, hammers home how fads can come into this industry. You know, bulletproof coffee was massive, wasn't it, a few years ago, 5 years, whatever it was. I never had one. I never drank a coffee with a shitload of butter in it. But it was such a big thing. There was coffee houses in London selling bulletproof coffee. And now I don't think you hear about it much anymore, do you? You know, it's a money-making thing. And that's another thing people got to be wary of, and why they should research and educate themselves on nutrition and not just buy into a fad diet or a supplement thing. Because there's, you know, if you're just eating naturally, there is no fad diet behind this. You're just eating what Mother Nature gives us again, isn't it? You know? But people still make money off the back of that. Bulletproof coffee is a good example of that, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, mate.
Let's go into then, mate, just to, because I know it's quite a heavy podcast, this one, but there's lots of good content in it, mate. So let's relate this to training. I've spoken with people. I'm going to start with endurance. I've spoken to people who would say, right, I love running. Running's my thing. Yes, I do a bit of weight training. And training should all be about balance as well. If running's your thing, or triathlon's your thing, you still need to do weight training. If weight training's your thing, you should still do some form of cardio, you know? So everything needs to be in some form of balance. But one key thing that comes up when you discuss to people about eating more protein and fats, and we're going to finish on how carbs are still okay to eat. It's just about the amount you eat and the type you eat. So we're not discrediting carbs in the slightest, but a lot of people who do endurance events will say, well, okay, well, if I turn to eating and getting my energy from ketones, will that mean it will affect my runs? Will I have less energy? You know, can you explain a little bit about how endurance athletes and people who love going out for that long run, how they can still thrive off eating protein and fats?
Yeah. So there's two ways that people can fuel themselves. One is by trying to become fat adapted and therefore using the fats that they store on themselves, or, you know, or they've eaten. Let's say they're hungry and they just want to use the fats that they're stored off themselves. You know, you've got hundreds and thousands of calories on you that you can, Murphy's has joined us, that you can access immediately if you're fat adapted. So you don't even have to worry about fueling at all. And that, in my view, is the optimal way of doing it. Mm. There's the other way, and the old school way, and the way I used to do it when I was military, is every you know, station, let's say you're doing a marathon, every couple of miles you'll have a glucosey type drink in order to give yourself that carb spike or carb ingestion to carry on fueling. Because when you're using a carb source, remember, it's that small tank, only about 2,500 calories worth of carbohydrates in your system, no matter what. That's it. It's bust. Mm. That's it. It's a finite amount. And that's why, let's say in the marathon, 20 miles, people feel that hit that wall. Mm. All that wall is they've run out of carbohydrates.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And therefore they're trying to adapt to using fats there and then as the fueling source. So my ideal approach would be to try to become fat adapted. You don't have to worry about fuel at all, unless you particularly want to, from a fueling point, because you're going to use fats as your fueling source. Mm. You can become flexible, of course, if you want to, but we can talk about that another time. There's nothing wrong with carbohydrates to boost you up a little bit, But in my opinion, become fat adapted. You don't have to worry about it. You just crack on because you can tap straight into the fat that you've got on you. Mm. Where you might want to consider is muscle breakdown. So if you're doing a lot of endurance work, you know, you will break down a little bit of muscle via glucose neogenesis to give yourself some glucose via the liver. Remember we spoke at the beginning. So you can offset that by making sure your protein intake is quite high. It's quite simple. You can do branched-chain amino acids or amino acids as well, but that's a completely separate issue, I'd say, Ash, at the moment.
Yeah. And again,
so that's it.
Yeah. I think on that, again, we could probably do a whole podcast just on talking about, you know, endurance training considerations with this sort of stuff as well, rather than just speak over it in a few minutes. It's important to point out, I think, isn't it? Ketones get used as energy just as quickly and efficiently, if not more so, than glucose, right? I mean, I think a lot of people might think, well, okay, but still glucose is the preferred body's choice. But it's not, is it?
And I'm not sure if the glucose is the preferred choice. I think it's used because it's available. It's the first available choice. If you've got some in there, the body will use the glucose first. Mm. See what I mean? It's a subtle difference. Whereas if you've got no glucose in there and you're completely fat adapted, you can use fatty acids and ketones to fuel yourself, and that's just as efficient. There is a slight, I'll talk about oxygen usage. There is a slight necessity to increase your oxygen intake when you're first starting to use fatty acids as a fueling source, but it's minuscule. And the benefits will far outweigh the negatives, I think.
Mm. I think, again, it comes back to if you do a lot of running, if you do triathlons, it's try it, isn't it? Try the become fat adapted, give it time. And I've, to be honest, I've done a lot of running in my time. I've gone through spells where I felt like I had to have a lot of carbohydrates. And this is going back 5-10 plus years ago, where you do the whole carb loading thing, which is taught at a very basic level. It's even in the level 3 syllabus for personal training to carb load 5 days before your endurance event, just start hammering the carbohydrates to really top up those glycogen cells as much as possible. And it didn't even sit right with me back then. I'm thinking, well, why top up my glycogen cells 5 days before? You know, and it's a big thing, isn't it? Carb loading. When you actually change your nutrition round and you do live off more protein and fats and you actually try this, you'll realize that actually you feel perfectly fine on your runs. You don't have that slump in energy like you expect. You don't cut out of energy like 6 miles into a 13-mile run. You actually feel fine. So I think if anyone listening to this does run, does do long distances, wants to try fat adaptive, but is a little bit unsure about it, just trust the process a little bit. Try it yourself. And you can use carbohydrates still. We're not saying don't use carbohydrates, are we, you know?
No. So two things, Ash, on that is if you do that whole carb loading thing, bear in mind your body can only, this is quite important, your body can only store 2,500 calories or there or thereabouts, depending on what size you are. Mm. So that's a finite amount. So let's say you're carb loading out, you know, exiting everything over and above. Once you fill that tank, all the rest of it goes to fat. Mm. All the rest of it goes to fat. So that the body's telling you, mate, use fat as your primary source of fuel anyway. Just see what I'm getting at. The body ain't stupid. Yeah. So that's quite an important thing to remember. All the rest of it, once you've filled that tank up, will go to fat, which the body is using that fat as a fat storage energy source. Mm. Hello. Do you know what I mean? I sound like a dick, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then there is the other thing of if you're using carbohydrates all the time, it's very important to remember what we spoke of earlier. The oxygenation and free radicals and the smog of burning glucose and glycogen as your fuel source.
Yeah.
And, you know, you very often see, and I hate to say this, I'll probably get beaten to death, but a lot of chronic endurance people look old and knackered. So, you know, they do. So anyway, I don't want to get into that. I'll get shot, but there you are.
But to be fair on that one as well, it just shows you don't have to be a specific body type to do long distance running. And I think that's a way to put it, isn't it? You know, you can have a lot of fat stores. If you're getting all your carbohydrates coming, all your fuel coming from carbohydrates, you can still carry a lot of fat, rely on the carbohydrates coming in because you're storing extra fat because you're living off carbohydrates all the time, isn't it?
There's two things there, Ash. You a lot of cardio, I know we're banging on a little bit here, but a lot of the cardio people think, oh, I need the fuel, therefore eat loads of carbohydrates, and they constantly adding a little bit, and they carry a bit more fat, a bit more fat. Mm. And of course, so you also store fats where you're using them most in your legs. Let's say you're a runner, you can very often store quite a lot of bit of fat into muscular triglycerides, where the triglycerides fat, where it's needed. And normally triglycerides are caused by carbohydrate intakes, not fat. Mm. Anyway.
Yeah, no, that's good. And just to finish on the endurance side, you mentioned hitting the wall earlier. I've hit the wall before, probably when my nutrition was wrong. I was probably having too many carbohydrates in my daily living, like a lot of people do. Why is it, if you hit the wall, does your body naturally just say, right, glycogen is done, straight into ketones? It's because your body's not used to it. Is that right? Is that right, me in saying, if your body is so used to living off glycogen all the time as a fuel source, if you get to that point where you burn off those 2,000 calories in a long run and then you hit the wall, your body can't just say, it's all right, we've got loads of body fat and protein that we can tap into. Whereas if your body is more adapted and used to breaking down body fat and protein, it's gone through that spell of getting used to that adaption. I'm sure you may hit the wall still, but it's not as likely. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're pretty much right. It goes back to the whole point of the podcast, Ash, is become fat adapted. Everything else will cascade from there. Mm. You can add carbohydrates to your bottle. Of course you can. There's nothing wrong with that. So you're using both fuel sources. So you're double rocket fuel. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't
have
to rely on one or the other. Use the bloody both of them. That's what we're designed to be. We're designed to be flexible. And that's why hunter-gatherers would have gone, climbed up a tree to get honey and get stung to death. But they realize the value of carbs. So they're not the pariah. Carbs are very, very useful and can help you sleep. They can refill your muscle glycogen stores. You know, they can make you feel happy and all that stuff. Just fat adaption is really, in my view, where you should be as ground zero. Mm. Bolt on carbs after that if you want to, not the other way around.
Yeah. Are you going, before we talk about strength and power, to finish on that, are you, when we said about the meal choice considerations, red meat in the morning, something with wings at lunchtime, fish in the evening, what are we adding to that? What's going on the other side of your plate, sort of thing?
So that is a very, I think that's probably another podcast, Ash, because if you go down the carnivore route and they say, you should just eat the bloody animal, nothing else. Mm-hmm. And their thought process is because you get all the nutrients, tongue to tail.
Yeah.
And indeed you don't need the fiber at all, which is getting more and more true. You don't need necessarily fiber from plant food at all. That's another topic. But as a general rule, if I'm talking to someone, I would say, something like maybe, I would probably do just the steak or the liver or the animal produce first thing one, maybe nothing else, just that. Then in the afternoon, it might be, let's say we're going down the chicken route, chicken salad.
Yep.
Fine. In my view, I normally don't do the kind of leafy salad I used to, but I normally put chicken and orange or chicken and piece of fruit. Mm-hmm. Because the oxalates and lectins and phytic acid, that's another story altogether.
Yeah.
And then in the evening, you might have fish and some form of vegetables if you wanted to. Or when you're fat adapted, every couple of days, I would have fish and rice because there's nothing wrong with rice. There's nothing wrong with carbohydrates. It's just don't have them if you're trying to get fat adapted for that 21, 28 days.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question, mate?
Yeah, it does. It does. When you're going through the process, the transition, just eliminate or just cut down the carbohydrates as much as possible.
I would just try to do bugger all.
Bugger all, nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
Just your meat and protein, just your protein and fats.
Pretty much.
Once we got through that stage, vegetables. Vegetables are good for us, right? They have a lot of benefits. It's part of nature again as well. They're packaged with vitamins and minerals, unsaturated fats. Vegetables like broccoli will have an element of protein to it as well. Can we still eat vegetables? If you're becoming fat adapted, is it a case of once you've gone through that transition phase, then you can gradually introduce some vegetables into it as well?
When I say, if you want to have vegetables when you're going through fat adapted, of course, there's nothing wrong with a bit. If you want to have some cauliflower or some broccoli or anything like that, have it, because it's not going to make a huge detriment. Remember, 50 grams or less, you're going to be under it. So don't worry. But I'm a little bit more hardcore insofar as I just go kind of nearly carnivore-esque. Then once you become fat adapted, 21 to 28 days ish then we can talk about oxalates and phytic acid and all that stuff that kind of people branch as anti-nutrients. And also the fact that a lot of vegetables are good. A lot of vegetables, be aware that their fat profile or their nutrient profile is very non-bioavailable to us. It's very difficult for us to extract the nutrients that we need from the vegetables, but that's another story, and it can and get a lot of people's backs up. So
I think maybe that would be another conversation where we talk and we relate it to like plant-based diets and stuff, because you know it's 2020, plant-based is a very much talked about dietitian intake nowadays, isn't it? So that would be one where we can discuss that a little bit more. Keeping it to fat adapted though, proteins, fats, you've got 50 grams of carbohydrates to play with maybe once you're fat adapted, once you've gone through that transition phase. And then again, you know, just be clever with that, isn't it? You know, don't see it as a bad thing. And you pointed out, I remember you, one of the phrases you hammered home on our advanced nutrition course was make sure you earn the carbohydrates as well, which is, I think, a key thing where any nutritional change is good, especially because we're talking about the health now as well. But don't forget the movement side of it, keeping the body moving, training, overloading, and that side of things as well. So you have got 50 grams of carbohydrates to play with and just see how it goes once you make these changes, I guess, isn't it?
Just to quickly clarify, Ash, so in order to become fat adapted, the experts say that you need to have 50 grams of carbohydrates or less, so you can have that within the adaption phase, you know what I mean? So it's 50 or less.
Yeah.
When you are fat adapted, then you can go up to quite a bit, and normally people talk about between 100 and 150 grams.
Okay. Yeah.
Once you're fat adapted, but I wouldn't do that every day. I would do that only on days I've trained, or if I'm not training at all, every fourth day. Because you know it takes a couple of days if you're not training even for the glycogen store to diminish, and then you feed them again, diminish, feed them again. But if you're training hard, hence the deserve them, you drain your glycogen stores, then after your training, have some more. Well, why not? You know, because you're adapted to use fat, but carbs are good too. So you know, don't necessarily get your knickers in a twist about it.
So the main point, carbohydrates and under when you're going through that transition phase, right?
Yep.
Correct. Okay, got you. And I guess as well with that transition phase, your habit forming, and that's what's key as well. Like a lot of us crave the sugars, crave the carbohydrates because our body is so used to having them. It's the same with trans fats. If you're getting a lot of takeaways and stuff like that, your body starts craving the trans fats. It knows the response it gets when you eat these trans fats, right? It's not an easy thing. For a lot of people, it won't be easy to just change these habits off the bat. They might try to transition slowly, but there's more room for error there. Like, you know, just try and introduce better eating to start with before they try to go fat adapted. But the key is once you start this, you must follow it through, isn't it?
Ash, you've struck a point with me that I'd forgotten to mention before is if you're eating, let's say you're going down this fat and you just think, oh, I've heard this guy talk about fat, I'm just going to eat loads of fat. That's not the way to do it. Especially if you're eating lots of hydrogenated crappy fats that have been messed around with by man in order to, you know, promote its shelf life or whatever. Remember, man, all cells in your body are made of protein and fat. So therefore, even if you're eating the wrong type of fat, it's going to go to your cells and make them quite rigid.
Okay.
And I can always tell when I'm doing someone's fat, you know, the pinch, you know, the calipers.
Yeah,
you can always tell somebody eats a lot of crappy fats because their skin is really, their fat is really hard. And that's a telltale right there. So it's really important, once again, protein and fat, just eat the animal. It's got all of it packaged in it for you. And nature isn't stupid. We don't have to worry about it. And a zebra doesn't think, oh, where do I get my next piece of fat from? You know, it eats what's designed to eat. Do you know? Anything else, buddy?
Yeah, one last thing, actually. So, and it comes back to, I like the way you finished there, talking about Mother Nature again, because Mother Nature gives us what we are designed to eat and our body responds to that. Our body builds up as a response to what we put into it, isn't it, really? And it's so important, like with the skin fold testing you're talking about then, it's so important that we put ourselves in as optimal state of health as possible. And yes, people can train hard and that's what they can focus on more. So some people might train hard thinking that they've got excuses then to eat a load of crap, but it's not the case. You've got to think about, it's not just about looking lean and having your abs on show or having your muscular growth. it's about the health side of things. And we'll talk about that on another day as well. Especially with that ties into fasting a little bit as well, in terms of the health elements to it all as well. Just finishing, we spoke about endurance training, strength and power training, chucking weights around as well. You've said already about having the red meat in the morning makes you perky, makes you very switched on, because of the hormonal effects of those foods. It's the same with training, isn't it? If you eat protein and fat predominantly as your macronutrients coming in, it will have a good benefit on your strength training, won't it? Because of that, because of the hormones that it's active or producing.
So Ash, let's say I'm training someone who wants to compete at a high level. Let's say he's an Olympian or he's a premiership rugby player or someone who, you know, basically if I tell him the wrong advice, he's going to perform poorly. So you have to be, you have to be sharp on this. So if the guy, there's a couple of caveats here. If he's fast twitch, there's one way. But anyway, let's say the guy is a strength or power athlete, not hypertrophy necessarily, strength or power. Then they're a fast twitch guy. They will do much, much better either training fasted or ensure they're training with a high protein, high fat from animal produce fueling source. They will not do well on carbohydrates before training because the slump kills them. And they just, they feel lethargic. So strength and power, protein and fat as a general rule. Hypertrophy is a slightly different thing because you can have, let's say, myofibril hypertrophy or sarcoplasmic hypertrophy. Sarcoplasmic would be kind of more pump. Mm-hmm. And that pump comes from the sarcoplasmic, which fluid, which will contain some kind of glycogen in there. So if you're just doing bodybuilding, carbohydrates around your workout can be very, very useful. Mm. So you have to kind of beware who you're talking to. So to recap, if he's a strength and power, pure strength and power, I'd go protein and fat, absolutely. If he's an endurance, I would explain two things. Either go fat adapted and use carbs occasionally for your training if you want, or use carbs all the time. The carbs all the time isn't my preferred option. And then the guy in between, the guy that just wants to look jacked in the mirror, I'd get him lean first, i.e. protein and fat all the time, get him keto, get him in ketones, ketosis, get him using fats of fuel. Once he's lean, then I'll start introducing carbohydrates in and around his workout. See what I mean? Because he's lean, he can absorb more. His cells are more ready to suck in those carbohydrates. But when you're fat, you're not. You don't deserve the carbs.
Earn your carbs, earn your carbohydrates. So just to finish on then, carbs are okay. You know, we're not saying carbohydrates are the enemy in the slightest, are we?
It's just the type, Ash, in my view. You know, a good quality, a bowl of rice, there's no way that's bad. Whereas a bowl of Cheerios, there's no way that's good. See what I mean?
Yeah. I'm quite partial to bread, Paddy. I do like bread. It's not the best though, is it? You know, and just to finish on as well, with saying like, it's just being wise with your carbohydrate choices. Can I just ask as well about the fat storage as well of carbohydrates? And I know this goes into a completely different topic, but if you're eating too much bread and too much starchy carbohydrates, as a guy, you store more body fat around the lower back or something like that. Is that right? As a result of that, am I on the right lines there?
You are. You kind of are, mate. You're going into the where we store fat being due to our hormonal profile. And really, really quickly, is if you're eating a lot of carbohydrates and you're not metabolizing them well, you'll store it around your muffin tops, male or female. That's where you'll get them, around the hips. If you're really, really stressed, you'll end up storing fat around your belly. If you're eating carbohydrates but you just simply shouldn't be eating them at all for whatever reason, then you'll store it around between your shoulder blades. You'll store a lot of fat around there. So as a general rule, to recap that one, the more carbohydrates you eat and you're not using, they will get stored, the fat, which will all get stored generally around the muffin tops. I'm doing this. Muffin tops. That's the carb amount, basically. So as a general rule, if I'm doing someone's skin folds and I'm doing their muffin tops, and I say, right, mate, you need to cut back on carbohydrates because you're fat round there. You want to get leaner. They come back a month later and it's fatter. I say, mate, you're eating carbs. And that is a lie detector right there.
Exactly. So Carbohydrates, they're perfectly fine for us. You just got to be smart with the ones that you're choosing to have on a daily basis.
And maybe on a daily basis would be too much, but that's by the by.
And again, it's being wise with it. You know, if you're thinking, oh, I really like cereal, I really like bread, but I know I shouldn't have it because it's not helping me achieve what I want to achieve, just don't have it in your cupboard. Do you know? And that's the simple thing, isn't it, really? Someone asked me, well, how do I stop myself from having these things? And this is going back quite a few years now. I said, don't have them in the cupboard and you won't reach for them. You know, they're not there as an option, so you won't have it. Another thing just to end on in terms of why I feel so passionate about nutrition as well is when, and you've probably had this where you're advising someone on nutrition and, or you might be talking about this and say, oh, this is all great, but there's no way my family are going to do it. So I'm going to have to buy different foods for me to different foods for them. I think if you're going to really consider this, and we really hope people do consider trying this at least to feel the benefits on the health side of things, you want your family and your friends to be as healthy as possible as well, and your kids. So again, it's not about you're going to eat this way because you've got a training goal for you and you only. You're going to hopefully want to eat this way for the health benefits, and that should then pass on to your partner, your kids, and all that sort of stuff. So making these changes in terms of what you put in your cupboards, how you shop, should hopefully reflect on your whole family, and hopefully people have the support from their family in doing it as well, because this is what we're discussing. It's not just about fat loss. It's not just about weight loss. It's not just about getting those abs to pop through for the summer. It's about being healthier, isn't it, really?
Mate, I think I'll go back to what we spoke about the very first minute. If you accept the fact we've only evolved 0.02% since we were hunter-gatherers, and you accept the fact that we should be eating protein and fat from animal sources, then it doesn't matter what we're discussing. That will tell you exactly what you need to be doing. That's it.
That's it. Well, I think that's a good finisher, mate, don't you?
All right, buddy.
Anything else to add, James?
There's loads, but I don't want to bore the ass off you. We can do it another time.
Well, the good thing is, out of this podcast, we've got loads of other podcasts coming to us now as well. So
we really do.
We will follow this up as well. It's not just a case where we've discussed it. It's in the bank. We will be discussing a lot of these points further down the line as well.
Maybe I'd bolt on a bit of something about fasting on the next one, the short and sharp one. That might be a good idea.
I think so. But James, as always, it's a pleasure. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your knowledge.
Ash, not a problem. Great to speak to you. I'll catch up with you soon enough.
Oh, mate.
Take care, buddy.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Today's podcast was brought to you by Performance Training Academy. My name is Ashley Hoff, and today's guest was James Buckingham. You can see more of our content by going to our website, which is www.performancetrainingacademy.com, or you can go to James's website, which is www.precisionperformance.co.uk. Please subscribe to our channel so you can always be updated when we have a new release, and would really appreciate it if you share our content around. Thanks very much.